When it comes to the lean executive recruiting landscape, staying ahead means staying informed. Subscribing to the Stiles Associates email list gives you access to the latest compensation data, industry analysis, and career resources straight from their recruiting team. Plus, you'll receive hand-picked career opportunities from leading companies, whether you're seeking new challenges or just curious about the market. So head over to leanexecs.com and sign up to get on the Stiles Associates email list and transform the way you make strategic decisions for your company and your career. Thanks for listening. Did you know I can help your organization on this journey of cultivating a culture of learning and innovation? I can be a trainer, coach, and advisor on topics including psychological safety, problem solving, and continuous improvement. I can add value to your management team meetings by speaking and facilitating discussions on these important topics. To learn more, visit markgraben.com or email me, mark@markgraben.com. Let's improve together.
Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, welcome to episode 148 of the podcast for May 22nd, 2012. Our guests today are co-authors of the new book titled Lean Led Hospital Design, Creating the Efficient Hospital of the Future, and they are Nada Grundin, who was previously a guest on episode 112, and her co-author Charles Haygood of Healthcare Performance Partners. It's a great book. We're going to talk about some of the key themes in the book about what is Lean Led Hospital Design, how do you get staff members involved, how do you get everyone collaborating, including architects, construction companies, hospital staff and leaders, to create the best combination of processes and space that are going to lead to the best care, the best stay for patients, and as well as providing support to healthcare professionals. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. Check out the book. You can go to leanblog.org/148 to find links to learn more about the book and how to buy it. Thanks for listening.
Well, Nada and Charles, it's a pleasure to have you both here on the podcast today.
Thanks for inviting us, Mark. This is great.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Now, Nada, you know, longtime listeners will have already heard you, you know, in our earlier podcast. But for the audience this time, can you introduce yourself and some of your background and experiences with Lean?
Sure. I'm Nada Grundin. I started as communications director with the fledgling Pittsburgh Regional Health Initiative back in 2001 when it was just getting started. And over the years, I collected some of the first case studies from their partner hospitals across Pittsburgh of these big improvements that they were making when Toyota-based lean improvements were applied and began to be understood in hospital settings. So those stories became the basis of my first book, which is called The Pittsburgh Way to Efficient Healthcare. But then since 2008, I've been working with Charles Haygood of Healthcare Performance Partners here, and he came up with the concept for a book about the way lean can and should influence hospital design.
Yeah, and as I should have mentioned for listeners, if they want to find the earlier episode, it's podcast 112, leanblog.org/112. Nada talking about that first book, The Pittsburgh Way, and the adaptation of aviation checklists to patient safety and overlap with lean. So I would encourage people go back to listen to that. And Charles Haygood, if you can likewise give an introduction to yourself and your work, please.
Sure. Charles Haygood was I'm the founder of Healthcare Performance Partners, which we call HPP for short, and founded the company in 2004 after previously working in healthcare as a part of my former parent company, the Access Group, which I was also the founder of. And the Access Group worked with manufacturers of all types, but primarily those within the automotive industry and the consumer goods industry, and some aerospace work. And then in 2004, after I had a healthcare experience of my own with a family member, truly recognized that healthcare needed lean as a way of doing business, and so I launched Healthcare Performance Partners at that time. I also was a former partner in an architectural firm that the Access Group owned, and we worked with many organizations within the industry, especially many of the top-tier auto firms. And we saw early on that process was a process focus was how you designed all facilities. You would never dream of designing a facility and forcing your process to fit into that facility. Rather, you would design the ideal future state, and then you would wrap the facility around it. So that's some of the early work we did in lean lead design was in an industry, but in recent years focused exclusively on the healthcare industry.
Yeah, and I think it's been a interesting evolution, as I'm sure you've seen. You know, 10 years ago, people were using lean to try to improve existing processes. You know, there's some changes you can make to workflow. Let's say rearranging instruments within a hospital laboratory, and some things that you can do. But boy, this trend now of taking advantage of the opportunity with all this healthcare construction that's been going on to try to design things, as you said, with process and space design working hand in hand. So we'll dig more into that. Back to NADA. Can you tell us? Yeah, tell us a little bit of the story of how the book came to be. You know, why write this? And I mean, it's an important book. It's a great book. How did it get to be?
Well, I was really captured by Charles's imagination when he talked about lean lead hospital design, because I know, and your listeners are aware, well aware of the transformation in the workplace that can take place when lean process improvements are implemented. So process improvements, I knew and I was familiar with, but. And of course, you wrote that terrific essay in the appendix about lean versus lame, meaning lean as misguidedly explained. And that's a great essay that shows the difference between how lean can genuinely help or it can be used as an excuse not to change. So that's all about the process. But as we know, and your listeners know, where it's implemented well, lean creates this great and peaceful environment of continuous improvement. So, And the other effects, waste and cost decline, safety and satisfaction go up. Well, the question that Charles asked me that really captured my imagination was, let's tackle this book this way. If lean is about continuous improvement, can we create an environment, in other words, the building, that can continuously improve too? And I thought, wow. So what we discovered in writing this book is that before design ever begins, the people across the organization have to decide how to design their work so that it can be easy to do the right thing every time. So rather than rely on architects, you know, the usual thing is you call the architect and you say, hey, make us up one of those lean hospitals, would you? And that's just not the approach, because as you know, the work has got to start with the process improvement. The process is like one of two gears. The process drives the design of the hospital. So, I mean, I'll give just one example. There was a hospital that discovered they were currently making patients go to 14 different locations on four different floors just to accomplish their day surgery. So that complexity, that hadn't been designed. That had just sort of crept in over the years. So as they designed their new hospital, they uncovered how complex the current system was. So they made sure that in the new hospital, the patient was going to have a simple U-shaped path on one floor with four stops. And by the way, it inspired them to start fixing their current process in the old hospital right away rather than wait for the new hospital to be built. So those sorts of stories began to really hit home for me. For lean-led design to succeed, you have to have this huge, broad coalition of workers from all levels of authority, and they have to have a say in the design, and that get into really great detail, more than just your average user group or leaders getting together and saying how they think it ought to be. So rather than being in the lead from the start, the architects now start out as team members and take the lead much later. So it increases the time and money spent up front, a pretty big leap of faith, but we've discovered that it dramatically reduces time and cost across the rest of the process. I'm sure Charles would agree with that.
Yeah, I'd like to ask Charles for an example, but I want to reflect on what you said. I like how you describe such patient-focused improvements, even down to the standpoint of having a peaceful environment, peaceful for staff, you know, less frustrating, less stressful. I think that translates into being a nicer environment for patients. So I think that's a great thing to be able to emphasize. Now back over to Charles. Is there anything that you would add on to NADA's kind of high-level description of lean-led design, or any examples that are favorites of yours?
Well, actually, the whole idea behind the book and actually the business of Healthcare Performance Partners began with a personal experience, which I alluded to earlier. I recall sitting in the hospital with my father for an extended period of time, and I just noticed the amount of waste that was forced upon the caregiver, the frustration that they experienced. Certainly, my father and I as a family member experienced as well, just the constant interruptions, the flow and the layout of the room and the locations and logistics associated with the supplies needed to provide care. And it was just purely, it was very obvious that this created a very inefficient environment, but in no way did it contribute to the quality of care that I felt like he deserved. So early on, I observed that there was ample opportunities for us in the design of this physical plant around the patient and the caregiver, for that matter. You know, and Nita and I have had a lot of conversations around this, and we've observed this in our work all over the U.S., and that is many organizations will embark upon a design project or a construction project, whereas they maybe didn't even need to move in that direction, given that it was actually the process that was broken. It was the utilization of current equipment, current facilities, current technology that was actually the problem, not the physical plant. So we've seen that in many cases.
Now, how do you describe, Charles, some of the benefits or some examples of, are there cases where you're able to kind of help quantify the impact that this application of, this design and build process has had, either for, construction timing or the end results for the owners, users, patients?
Well, never is it just the architects that should be involved, nor the staff just being involved in the process. Certainly, you would want to bring together all entities involved in the process, including engineering firms that may be involved with the design of the equipment that may be used. Equipment planners need to be involved. You certainly want the construction team at the table as well. Many folks today would call that an IPD, an integrated product development team, and in industry, Mark, which you may be familiar with as well, as we coined the term IPT, which is an integrated product team. That is, in my opinion, is the approach that needs to be utilized, whereas all stakeholders and all contributors are at the table, playing a vital role in the design of the new facility. But some of the examples of the impact of that approach that we've seen include reducing the amount of time from master plan to move in by up to 25-30%, 40% less square footage required in storage areas. And of course, you have to have the process behind that to take advantage of that. 25% less square footage overall in some cases. We've seen instances where there's a 75% reduction in the cost of shelving versus a traditional facility.
Now, this process is quite a change for the staff. Seeing where hospitals, like I think Nada said, are often expecting the architects to just hand them something, and this lean-led design approach requires so much more participation from people. It requires time. It's also got to be very different from the standpoint of the architects, who might be used to driving things in a different way. I'll throw this open to either of you. Share some experiences about how has it been to get architects to adopt this new approach, or some of the architects actually, kind of driving and pushing this, or are the hospitals pulling them into this new style of collaboration?
Well, I can just talk about one of the talks that I gave down in Arizona to a group of architects, and I was a little bit leery. I thought, gosh, I don't know if they're going to go for this new approach where they're not in the lead from the start. And by the time I got done describing what lean-led design is, there were several of the young architects that came up and wanted to talk some more and say, where is there a hospital CEO? I'd like to work with somebody who thinks like this. So I think that was a very encouraging sign, because architecture is almost as complicated. It's a very complicated discipline, and construction of hospitals is a very complicated discipline, and the provision of healthcare is a very complicated discipline. So to get all of that streamlined and marching in the same direction, there's a tremendous amount of streamlining and benefit to be had from that. But I don't know. What do you think, Charles, about the readiness of architects?
Well, I think there's a chasm there. I think there are architects on one side of the equation that have embraced this as a way of doing business, or want to embrace it as a way of doing business. I also think there are some of the more traditional approaches in architecture that are going to be a tough paradigm to break for some architectural organizations. I think, Mark, as you described, I think many healthcare organizations are actually pulling the architects to this as a way of doing business. I think some of the architectural firms have recognized this as a differentiator for them, to embrace this as a way of doing business, to design the facility around the process. And there are stark differences between a traditional architectural design approach and a lean-led design approach. I think those firms that are going to survive long-term are those that recognize that. But I think it's been a little slower than I would like, but I have seen some significant improvement just in the last 18 to 24 months in this space.
And Charles, who are some of the hospital healthcare organizations that you've featured in the book? Some of those that are on the leading edge of having used this lean-led design approach?
Well, and there's various elements of lean-led design, which we describe in the book, from everything from master planning and pre-design, schematic design, all the way through move-in and post-occupancy. So there are organizations that are I think, further along in certain aspects of that continuum than others. We discuss Sutter Health in the book. There's obviously work that ThetaCare is doing in this space as well. We highlighted Monroe Clinic, which just followed this process and move in Monroe, Wisconsin, and have done some really good things there as well. There are pockets of this work being done all over the country, and there are. The problem with that I hear from many architects and construction companies are that they're getting RFPs from healthcare organizations, and they describe them as a vegetable soup of services. They throw in, they give me a three pack of Six Sigma and a half a case, and a value stream here and a theory of constraints there, and they're throwing all the buzzwords that they've ever heard into the RFPs, not really understanding what that means. And so there's still a lot of education that has to take place in this space.
You know, one of the things I'll say was when we first started this project, I thought, well, I can understand how lean would add a lot of value when you're in the very beginning. You're doing concept and design, and you haven't put the pencil to the paper yet. But the first place that Charles sent me was to a hospital in Virginia where they were just moving in. The hospital was already built. The opportunities for doing lean-led design on the hospital were already consumed. And I thought, well, I can't imagine what kind of value we're going to add here. And it was fascinating. It's one of the early chapters in the book, and I devote quite a lot of time to the value that can be derived from implementing Lean 5S Visual Workplace on move-in. It's that amount of time and money saved, money regained from equipment and stuff going back in a timely fashion was quite amazing. And the amount of stuff they needed in that hospital was considerably less than a hospital of its size. So I think one of the other hopeful messages in the book is that lean, no matter where you are in your process of building or thinking about it, there's a spot where lean's going to help you realize some value.
Well, it's something, Mark, that I'd like to add to that is that we hear many hospitals and healthcare organizations say to architects and construction teams that we want to hire you to give us a lean hospital. And while that's great, and while physical plant certainly plays a role in that, you can have the best technology, you can have the best people, the best equipment, and certainly the best facilities available. But at the end of the day, you're only as good as your ability to integrate those into a patient-focused, patient-centered, caregiver-centered approach and process. So it's the system at the end of the day that's going to make that happen. But again, physical plant and layout and design can play a big role.
Right, that's exactly right. In fact, that is one of the early points that we make, and that is if you aren't lucky enough to have a budget and you maybe feel like you need to be doing some remodeling in your hospital, but you can't, don't take that as an excuse that you can't make improvements, because you can improve your processes all the time with some pretty dramatic results without building. So there's lots to learn.
Yeah, I mean, it can be as simple sometimes as moving three tables, or sometimes it means completely renovating or completely rebuilding new space. So, any of those different extremes, or as you point out and describe so well in the book, at those different stages in the process, that if somebody is beyond those initial meetings and that they don't have to wait 30 years for the next new building, that they can jump in and even apply these principles and concepts, because as you're both saying, it's really about not just the smart design, but of space and processes, the continuous improvement of both. And there's just a lot of great stuff in the book. So I'm glad you're able to share a little bit about that today. The title, again, is Lean-Led Hospital Design, Creating the Efficient Hospital of the Future. It's available in paperback through Amazon and other sources. It's in Kindle format for those of you who read that way. There's a website for the book as well?
That's right.
Yes, there is.
LeanLedHospitalDesign.com.
Okay, and I'll link to that in the show notes, the blog post for the episode. You can find Neda at NedaGrunden.com to learn more about her and her work. Charles, Healthcare Performance Partners, is at HPP.BZ is the website. And Charles, maybe as a final thought, anything else you would have to say about your firm for the audience?
Well, we have greatly enjoyed the opportunity we've had to work with firms all over the U.S. And in the Europe as well, and in incorporating this approach into the design and planning of a new facility. And we get asked often, what do we need to look for in a firm, an architectural firm that would want to partner with us in this type of work, or who should we look for as we're sending out RFPs? I would challenge any healthcare organization to look for a firm that actually is making lean a way of doing business for their own operation, and they have a system by which they operate to as well. And they need to make sure that lean is just not a bolt-on or a thing that they've added on to just how they do work. It needs to be integrated and integral as to how they do business themselves.
Yeah. Well, great points. Both of you again, Neda Grunden and Charles Haggett. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show with us today.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for all you do for Lean.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For Lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email Mark at leanpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, podcast listeners. I'm excited to announce the release of the audiobook version of my new book, The Mistakes That Make Us, Cultivating a Culture of Learning and Innovation. Listen and dive into powerful insights on fostering growth through mistakes. Whether you're a leader, entrepreneur, or just trying to get better at learning from mistakes, this audiobook is for you. Get it now on Audible, Amazon, and Apple Books. Visit mistakesbook.com for more info.